Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. I hope that you're having a great time out there. This is an open lines call-in show. The number to call if you'd like to be part of the program is 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number is 855-346-3351. First-time callers, most welcome. I have some things about state-sponsored organized psychiatric industries that I'd like to talk about tonight, but whatever you'd like to talk about is what is on the agenda. So give a call. 267-521-0167. Let's see, as I'm just pushing this thing up on Facebook, they, you know, inside of this little studio here, they have a whole little thing that allows you to put stuff out to Facebook and have all this little audio stuff, which one day, you know, the next time I have time to sit around and make audio clips, then I'm gonna just do that. Let's see, hopeful news. I don't know if hopeful is the right word, but there was an article in the New York Times today, investigation into violence toward teenagers at Rikers Island, and the violence that young people have been exposed to been exposed. The opening letter to the, you can actually get the U.S. Department of Justice report that was submitted to Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York City, I think. Submitted to or written by? Well, anybody who knows this, give me a call. But one way or the other, this is what's going on at Rikers Island, and it's part of the investigation. And so, dear Mayor de Blasio, Commissioner Ponte, and Mr. Carter, two, from the Department of Justice. Okay, sorry, I get a little confused every now and then. So it says, we write to report the findings of the investigation of the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York into the treatment of adolescent male inmates between the ages of 16 and 18 at New York City Department of Corrections, DOC, or the department, jails on Rikers Island, Rikers. By letter dated January 12, 2012, we notified the city of our intent to conduct an investigation pursuant to the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act, the CRIPR Act, and of the Violent Crime Control Law, this writing is really tiny, Enforcement Act of 1994, the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994. CRIPA and Section 14141 give the United States Department of Justice the authority to seek a remedy for a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the constitutional rights of inmates in detention and correctional facilities. Our investigation has centered exclusively on whether DOC adequately protects adolescents from harm. More specifically, we have focused on whether adolescents are subject to excessive and unnecessary use of force by DOC corrections officers and their supervisors, whether DOC adequately protects adolescents from violence by other inmates, and whether DOC's extensive reliance on punitive segregation subjects adolescents to an excessive risk of harm. And there's a footnote that says, when we use the term adolescents or adolescent inmates in this letter, we are referring to male inmates between the ages of 16 and 18 housed at Rikers. And goes on and found all of these different abuses that are now being highlighted. So that's one thing that I hope that we'll be coming back to throughout the night, and it's a 79-page report, which I have not read yet, but will, and we'll talk about it as I do that. And then there was something else also. But if you'd like to call in and, you know, got something to talk about, want to put something on the agenda here, area code 267-521-0167, 267-521-0167. And then somebody sent me a mental health. I keep on getting these Mental Health America newsletters. The organization that Adolf Meyer and Clifford Beers started back in early 1900 when it was called the National Committee on Mental Hygiene. And so there's this blurb that they wrote in the news every now and then. I think last week we were talking about one of their in-the-news ones, too. That was on the Huffington Post. And I'm just going to do a little bit of comparison here between what was presented in the Huffington Post and what was presented by Mental Health America. The headline for Mental Health America was, if I could get it, blood tests could detect suicide risk. The headline for the Huffington Post was, this gene could tell you who is at risk for suicide. So the Huffington Post said a new study could be the key to creating a blood test that can screen people for suicide risk. Such a test, experts say, could improve treatment in hospitals, clinics, or even help military leaders assess which active duty members and veterans are most at risk of suicide. Veterans, watch out, veterans. The military is battling a suicide problem, right? Okay, so the veterans are definitely being targeted here. There is then a quote that says, what we envision, potentially, is using this test in psychiatric emergency rooms. For example, it could dictate closeness of monitoring and treatment options and drive potentially more fast-acting treatment in someone who is really high risk, said author Zachary Kaminsky, Ph.D. of Johns Hopkins Medical, Johns Hopkins Medicine, in a phone interview with the Huffington Post. In the military, quote, this is the quote, if you're able to identify vulnerable individuals with a blood test, you may, for example, ask them to turn in firearms when they come back from active duty or limit access to lethal means, end quote. The new research, this is all in the Huffington Post, the new research reveals a genetic mutation that may be able to predict suicide risk with a minimum of 80% accuracy. The study published July 30th on the website of the American Journal of Psychiatry found that alterations to the gene SKKA2, which help regulate the brain's responses to stress hormones, was more common in people who had committed suicide. Maybe brown hair was more common, too. Ugh. So the MHA, the Mental Health America little blurb about this, says, a new study suggests that suicidal thoughts might be determined by a blood test. The study published in the American Journal of Psychiatry found that the gene SKA2, which is involved in stress reaction, could predict suicide risk, may predict, and then predict. Because everybody, I mean, the four goals of psychology, psychiatry, to identify, define, predict, and control human and animal behavior. That's the goals of this field. So prediction, if they can't predict or if they can't work toward predicting, then a whole, like, fourth of their field is wiped out, right? So it says that the researchers determined that in some groups, lower levels of SKA2 were associated with people who had taken their own life. In others, a mutation that changed the way the SKA2 gene worked was also associated with that group. Both findings are significant because if the SKA2 gene isn't functioning properly, the body isn't able to suppress the release of cortisol, a stress hormone, throughout the brain. How? Anybody know anything about any of this who wants to just weigh in here? 267-521-0167. It is no secret that I am not a science person, and I don't know the first thing about any of this genetic mumbo-jumbo. But what I know is that they keep saying thoughts might be, could be, maybe, but still yet no proof of anything, and yet we're going after the veterans. The idea of this, look at what, oh my goodness, the researchers. So this is just reading from the Mental Health America's little newsletter here in the news. Sorry, just give me a second. So the researchers confirmed the results with blood samples from three different ongoing studies. They then designed a test to see if they could predict which of the participants had either suicidal thoughts or attempts in the past. Who are these people? What kind of test? What do you mean? They then designed a test to see if they could predict which of the participants had either suicidal thoughts or attempts in the past. The test was able to predict participants' history of suicide attempts or suicidal thoughts with at least 90% accuracy. The next step of research involves testing hundreds more samples from soldiers pre- and post-deployment as part of a collaboration with the U.S. Army STARS project. Okay, so seriously, watch out, veterans. It's not just that they're coming after you. It's that while you're in pre- and post-deployment, people who are, I don't even, is anybody out there listening? 267-521-0167. I feel like this is really a big problem, and I would be fascinated to know what people's perceptions of this are. I'm trying to get to the page, the Huffington Post article. So I'm not sure where in this article it talks about the veterans and the pre-post deployment testing that's going to be done. But it does mention the article, the quote says, this is in the Huffington Post, we have found a gene that we think could be really important for consistently identifying a range of behaviors from suicidal thoughts to attempts to completions, Kaminsky said in a press release. We need to study this in a larger sample, but we believe that we might be able to monitor the blood to identify those at risk of suicide. Shouldn't people, before they're allowed to do research into things like this, shouldn't they have some understanding of what it means? This is bizarre to me. And then very importantly, the Huffington Post did say that the study discloses that Kaminsky, along with this is a study people, right? Along with co-author Holly Wilcox, PhD, holds a patent to, quote, evaluate risk of suicidal behavior using the SKA2 gene. Another researcher on the study, Dr. Jennifer Payne, received legal consulting fees from Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson, as well as research support from Corcept Therapeutics. Niculescu has also, and I don't know if that's, I'm pronouncing that person's name right, has also been on the hunt to find biomarkers linked with the suicide risk, and he called Kaminsky a, quote, great corroboration of what Niculescu and other research groups have discovered in the field. Such corroboration across different research departments, said Niculescu, is key to eventually developing a blood test for suicide risk. What a joke. What a, you know, this just really burns. It makes me so mad. And then, quote, I am glad to see that their top finding, SKA2, what they happen to have a patent on, was shown in their study to interact with our top finding from last year's SAT1, wrote Niculescu in an email to HuffPost. Quote, we have taken a look at SKA2 in our data sets and see that it is decreased in expression in the blood of suicide victims. People who, you know, the language is just really, it's just so bad. It's just so bad. Line 202, your line is open.
Lauren, does anywhere in there, just listen to your information about the, about that study, are they going to use that to say that you don't get deployed, or what's the purpose of doing that? I mean,
my guess is to drug them. No, yeah, because it said to take people's guns away, that you might be able to identify if you could identify, right, because at the beginning that's what they were talking about, that if you, you know, can even help military leaders assess which active duty members and veterans are most at risk. The Huffington Post, the military is battling a suicide problem. At least 22 veterans commit suicide every day, according to a 2014 study by the Department of Veteran Affairs, while male vets under 30 are 3 times more likely to commit suicide than their age group and general population. Quote, what we envision potentially is using this test in psychiatric emergency rooms. For example, it could dictate closeness of monitoring and treatment options and drive potentially more fast-acting treatments in someone who is really high risk, said lead author Zachary Kaminsky, Johns Hopkins, whatever. Quote, in the military, if you were able to identify vulnerable individuals with a blood test, you may, for example, ask them to turn in firearms when they come back from active duty, or limit access to lethal means.
Oh, but it's all right. They can kill in the name of the United States government. Mm. Well, you know, this is kind of bad because, you know, if for the people that really believe in, emotional stress is kind of mental illness, it's going back to say that, you know, you're just a weak individual and, you know, everything is predetermined. I mean, I think it sounds to me like a bad science fiction movie. I mean,
it really does. And, you know, Sue, thanks, Sue, just sent me a link here to The Independent. Maybe this is Canadian or something, but it, from, you know, Tuesday, August 5th, prototype blood test will assess for suicide risk in soldiers. And then the subline, scientists believe they may have found genetic key to identify which Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are vulnerable.
Mm.
My God.
Well, you see, in that horrible thing, I think that everybody could be vulnerable. I mean, I've talked to veterans who served in Vietnam, and they talk about the things they've seen, and in some cases, the things they've done. And so these kind of nightmares are there. I don't know. I mean, what kind of evidence do they have that they just look at some? What is it on the gene spectrum? What are they seeing that tells them?
Breakdown. Yeah. The simple breakdown that Mental Health America rewrote it as is the researchers determined that in some groups, lower levels of SKA2, the gene, were associated with people who had taken their own life. In others, a mutation that changed the way the SKA2 gene worked was also associated with that group. Both findings are significant because if the SKA2 gene isn't functioning properly, the body isn't able to suppress the release of cortisol, a stress hormone level, throughout the brain. You know, it would be interesting to see if there was some link, who even knows, but I mean, if they're talking cortisol, and cortisol is related to fat, and fat is related to sugar production, and sugar production is related to diabetes, which is what, you know, these psychiatric drugs cause, I think that that's part of what needs to be looked at, because so many of these vets who are taking their own lives and who are completing suicide are on psychiatric drugs.
Yeah. Is anybody doing any study on that, though? I mean, we know with the SRIs that, you know, that people do get that. I know anecdotally, even for my own self, the antidepressants can make you agitated. They try to say that these medications don't cause mental illness, but they cause some, they aggravate some symptoms that look like it. I mean, there are many people that get antidepressants and they go into a manic state. We really don't know enough about just the people that present with emotional distress without trying to predict something like this. So what does that mean, that you can tell if an embryo could be at risk for suicide?
It seems, because they seem to be saying that it's a blood test, and that they talk about it being monitored as to how close of a situation somebody is in, so they know what kind of quote-unquote treatment to give or not give. It's such a joke. Like, why are these people not held responsible for understanding suicide before they start going around thinking that there's some blood test that's going to be able to predict?
Lauren, they listen to your show. They listened to you for years, and you said that there's no evidence, that there's no blood test. So I guess they found one.
Well, no, because it's still saying might be. They're all positioning it as if, and they're continuing research as if, but they have no confirmation of any of this. All they have is that sometimes this gene happens to be associated with people who were at a high risk, who had some level of experience of suicide in their life, or that completed.
Well, doesn't cortisol
but
have
those
to do
people
with
may have also had a high rate of having brown hair.
Oh, really?
Who knows? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's as solid as the idea that, you know, a lot of women had cats when they were pregnant.
Oh yeah, it's like a lot of people were blonde, and so therefore, blondes are more likely to commit suicide. I mean, a subset. You can pick anything out to make it that way.
Exactly. It's not. And because they don't have it, but that they are planning on doing, according to the MHA, Mental Health America, they are planning on doing the next step of, this is a quote, the next step of the research involves testing hundreds more samples from soldiers pre- and post-deployment as part of a collaboration with the U.S. Army STARS project. And STARS, in that case, is spelled S-T-A-R-R-S.
That's not enough. That's not for a study. If they're doing hundreds, I think that's not enough. They'd have to do tens of thousands to have some kind of validity.
I think the larger issue is that our federal government is doing research on people who are in the military or just post their service, and So now you're a research subject. Are you being told that you're a research subject on this? B, is this like the Tuskegee study where the men, where their blood was tested week after week and nobody was told what they were looking for? Or are these men and women actively being told that they are being tested for a suicide gene?
So they're going to take this information and use this to kind of predetermine whether I don't think that it's possible, because there are other variables that determine whether a person is a suicide risk. You know, there's environmental conditions.
And yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, don't you think they have to have some knowledge?
That's been suicide. I mean, it's absurd as that. I mean, there are all the environmental conditions, I mean, that puts a person, it's kind of, like, ridiculous to say that. I mean, it may be very well true that some people are susceptible, but you got a group of people who are going to be, who are military active duty, and they're going to be more susceptible to something like emotional stress. I mean, war is what it is.
That's what I mean. Anybody who understands what suicide is about would not logically think to a blood test.
Yeah, it's about pain, hopelessness,
and it is painful. And the idea that you would tell people, that you would say that it's a gene. So if you have this gene, then what? Then this is what you're. I mean, you know, learned behavior, learned helplessness.
Eugenics, you know. I mean, you're gonna decide what group of people, you know. It really does. It really sounds like something that you really don't want to be a part of, because that's really kind of saying it sounds like a bad science fiction movie. What's going to happen? You're going to walk into a place, they're going to take a few droplets of your blood, and they're going to say, aha, you returned back from war. We think that you're a risk. And where is this information going to go? I mean, does that
the
mean...
The Army STARS program, do you know, I'm just looking this up. So the Army STARS is the Army Study to Assess Risk and Resilience in Service Members. Army STARS is the largest study of mental health risk and resilience ever conducted among military personnel. Army STARS investigators are looking for facts that help protect a soldier's mental health and factors that put a soldier's mental health at risk. Army STARS will run...
How are they doing that part? I'd be interested in that. I mean, besides they're taking blood, what are they doing? What's the protocol?
I'm not clear, but it's Michigan, University of Michigan, UC San Diego, U.S. Army, National Institute of Mental Health. I'm just looking at the sponsors. University Uniform Services University, Harvard Medical School, and the University of Michigan again. Yeah, that's you know, who this is. And however, research findings are reported as they become available. What's new?
So they have, I guess I would want to know about informed consent and who's on the IRB panel for that.
Yeah, I would be really, really interested. They have a whole website here. It's armystars.org, STARRS. There's data that's been collected. There's 22 months of data that's been collected at three sites, 57,269 participants, and it says 34,000 851 unique soldiers of blood tubes collected. Mother of...
Well, I guess they can...
I guess they can do whatever they want, right? They're the government.
When you're in the military, you... I guess you don't really have very many rights, but what I'm saying, this is a different group of people. This is not like taking a randomized sample of people. You've got people who are going to be that have been, not all military people go to combat, but a great deal of people go to combat, especially in this Iraqi Afghanistan situation. You have people that have spent longer periods of war than the people in World War II, you know, two or three times.
Right.
So they're going to have a predisposition to. I shouldn't say they have a predisposition, but they
have been absorbing
a lot of violence. They've absorbed a lot of violence. They've been isolated away from their families. You know, like I say, it's not a randomized study. I mean, I don't know what it is.
I don't know how they've gotten these people. I'm really just starting to look at it. But it can't be. I mean, I'm just looking. It says Army Stars by the numbers, quarter four, 2013. And under it says total, where did that go? For the new soldier study, there were 57,269 new soldier study participants, and 34,851 unique soldier blood tubes were collected. I don't know what their informed consent process. I don't know if it was randomized. I don't know if this was voluntarily what was sought. I don't know if this is what they've gotten up to this point.
No, you didn't. You didn't see this before, but in the article, did you see, and it probably is not there, that they've done this over what period of time?
I don't know. It seems this is quarter four, 2013, this page that opens up from the Army sites, and this project runs through June 2015, as far as I can tell. Area code 609, your line is open. Do you know anything about any of this?
I don't know anything about it, but I'm laughing. This is absurd. It's like, it reminds me of like, you know, divining the future by reading entrails or something like that. It's just, I mean, what? It's really absurd. I'm thinking, is this come from the Onion or is this real? Is this real? They can come up with one maybe for homicide next, and whether someone's going to become a skydiver. It's just absurd. I know suicide is a serious issue with the soldiers and everything, but this just is really really wacky stuff. Just useless research, and they've got a whole, you know, a constant stream of guinea pigs to test these
right.
these theories. I mean, I've read some books about suicide and what are some, you know, predictors, and I mean, there's some people who have done some serious thinking about it, I know, and, you know, a blood test? Come on. It's wacky.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, when you look at it, I found a page on the Army Stars that goes over to their access to data, and under it, it was the all-Army study occurred between January 2011 and April 2013, and it said 35,000 completed self-report questionnaires, and the new soldier study said it was between February 2011 and November 2012, and there were 46,000 completed reports. But that data that I was just reading to you a moment ago, that had the how many blood tests, that doesn't seem to be measured. How many blood tubes they got out of them doesn't seem to be measured in here. And so I don't know. It would be very interesting. And of course, Harvard is involved. And anytime Harvard's involved, we got to look a little bit closer,
yeah.
But they said that the numbers would be coming out this month, and you know, as it seems that they've been come out and that they're going to be doing more.
Lauren, because I want to see if, you know, what kind of methods are they using. You know, I mean, I think it's absurd they're doing it in the first place. But are they,
yeah.
I mean, are they doing people who have not seen combat as well as people who have seen combat? Are they evenly dispersed over the whole United States?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know,
are
they...
There's so many variables.
I don't know, but
so
I know that, like, the lead researchers have a patent on the idea that this SKA2 thing, who it looks like they're working in conjunction with these people, with this Army Corps stuff.
So they've got
on the idea or what?
On this specific
on
piece
the article,
genetic...
The article in the Huffington Post said it wasn't related to the Army STARS, but it was related to this SKA2 thing, that they, where was it, the patents, that they have a, I wish I had a highlighter.
And it, I mean, this is probably millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and veterans can't get in to get physical health care. They can't get an appointment.
Yeah, the co-authors, Kaminsky and Wilcox, hold a patent to, quote, evaluate risk of suicidal behavior using the SKA2 gene. And another researcher on the study received legal consulting fees from Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, as well as research support from Corcept Therapeutics.
You know, why don't they just come to the conclusion that, you know, it's the war is not, violence is not something that's good for people to, you know, leave for the comeback, and that if you have to do war, that you should give people who serve their country so courageously, honorably, give them the services that they need, versus to do this thing of kind of trying to come up with some kind of pseudoscience of who or who not is going to commit suicide. I mean, you're...
And
you know,
that what, if you have, and that what, on the other side, if you have this gene, that's it, you're done, you might as well just do it now.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, why would, like, and that nothing's in your control and that nothing is people's responsibility.
Well,
and
triage, they,
choice.
It seems like maybe they don't want to give veterans service. I mean, this is another way of just saying that, we'll decide. We'll see from if you have the right, if you have a gene, then maybe you'll get some extra service. But you know, they can't even. I mean, why do this? They can't even make appointments for people who have real physical illnesses to get taken care of. Even people that want to come in and talk to somebody, they don't have appointments. I mean, and then they go along and just overdose people on psychiatric and painkillers.
You know, how much money gets paid out? I wonder how many people, how much money gets, you know, how much money people are making from doing this research, how many people, how much money they get for the time period. It's just such a waste, you know. You just think about it. It's just a waste of, like, resources.
Well, here, we could take a guess, right, because they list the research team. So the interdisciplinary team is led by co-principal investigators, Robert J. Ursano, M.D. of the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences, and Murray Stein, M.D., M.P.H. of the University of California, San Diego. The study's site investigators are Stephen G. Heringa, Ph.D., University of Michigan, and Ronald C. Kessler, Ph.D., Harvard Medical School. The NIMH collaborating scientists are Lisa J. Culp, MPH, NIMH, and Michael Schoenbaum, PhD, NIMH. NIMH and Army Oversight and Implementation Leadership include Scott Luke, GS-15, Acting Army Executive Director, Army STARS, Kevin Quinn, PhD, NIMH Study Director, Army STARS. James Churchill, PhD, NIMH Program Officer, Army STARS. Colonel Stephen Servosky, MD, MPH, Preventive Medicine Consultant, Army STARS. Kenneth Cox, MD, MPH, Medical Informatics Consultant, Army STARS. Taken together, the depth and breadth of the research team, the tremendous scale of the project, and the timely reporting of the research findings make Army STARS truly groundbreaking research that will benefit members of the armed forces and the nation for decades to come.
I would just estimate it's probably just many millions of dollars people are getting, you know, paid.
Millions, with
research.
Billions on the line, with billions on the line. Right? If they say that they come up with some test and then they get some kind of magic pill that somehow fixes SK2 or
then,
whatever,
and then just,
right?
What are they going to do to these people once they, like you say, once they're certain that someone's more likely to commit suicide, then they're just going to, what are they going to do, lock them up and get them in treatment and destroy their mind? You know?
Right. I mean, and that's the whole thing. Whether they have a blood test or not, it's still a human rights violation.
Yeah.
A blood test doesn't make it any less of a human rights violation. In fact, it makes it more like every other medical situation, like cancer, where you could decide that you want to fight it or you don't.
It would be another tool of coercion if they had a blood test that was 80% accurate or something like that, or said to be, then it's another. You know, you get a tool of coercion, and you can tell people, well, look, you know, we took your blood, you've got this, whatever it is, T497, and now it looks like you're going to, you know, kill yourself. So please, you know, you've got to accept this treatment. And
in the meantime,
you know,
give us your guns.
Yeah.
And we're going to just slowly take away all of your civil liberties, or maybe all at once, and just institutionalize you preventatively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
you know,
it does say specifically to keep away anything, any lethal access to anything, any access to anything lethal, and so anything can be lethal, right? I mean, I mean, I remember, like, in New York, they had printed these cards, the Patient's Bill of Rights, on little like, wallet-sized cards, and they had to have them reprinted with the corners rounded because they said, with the plastic corner, it could be too sharp,
oh,
and
right.
somebody could hurt themselves with, you know, with their Bill of Rights. And so, what becomes lethal? And so, I mean, our veterans again, that we need to absolutely be drawing attention to these kinds of things, because I sure didn't know about ArmyStars.org before, or this, you know, public-private partnership between. The Uniformed Services University and Harvard and NIMH and University of Michigan and University of, San Diego, California? It's so much. It really is so much.
Well, you know, they do this all the time. I would think the Huffington Post would have a story saying, you know, as a result of the scandal that the VA has, that the House of Representatives decided to, you know, speed dollars. I know that they are going to let people receive services. They've contracted with some other vendors for that. But this is probably going to be, a big million-dollar, multi-million-dollar project. And, and, you know, I'm just saying, they've been doing all the studies, and I still don't see, I mean, NIMH and other places have been doing these studies on the various supposedly disorders, trying to find the, gene mapping for various diseases or whatever else, but what are they doing with it? I mean, that shows you right there that it really is nothing. Because they've been doing it for at least 20 years.
Yeah.
And now they're going to throw more money at it? I mean, right now, what difference does it make if you know what the gene mapping is for any of those disorders? What are you going to do? You're going to say, oh, you shouldn't, ma'am, we took your placenta, you shouldn't have the baby because we're going to tell you your baby might be predisposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, as a result of this, you have a seven-year-old child. We think that they should take these drugs and
right.
that they're going
right.
to do it. Now, what kind of
yeah.
action are they going to take? I mean, this is taking away two process. That means, suppose you are a gun owner. That means that you haven't done anything. Going to say just because of some markings on a piece of paper that because of that, you know, you shouldn't have a gun. I mean, you haven't done anything. You haven't had any. So, you know, how is this going to be used? What's the purpose? You know, why? It's like saying, dig a hole in the ground, move the dirt from this place, and then move it back. And you say, why are you doing that? Why are they doing this? They really think that they'll be able to say who is going to be at risk for suicide. And if they just humor me, and they say if they could say that, what you're going to do? You're going to say, you can't go into the military, you shouldn't be deployed because of that? How is it? How are they proposing to use this?
Well, I mean, they're saying it specifically. The lead author of the study, he offers examples. In the military, if you were able to identify, this is a quote, vulnerable individuals with a blood test, you may, for example, ask them to turn in their firearms when they come back from active duty or limit access to the lethal means. That's the goal.
Yeah, well, that sounds to be so arbitrary. So you're just going to say you're going to limit. You haven't done anything wrong.
But you've got this thing in your blood. You've got the gene. You're at risk.
You mean you're just a bad seed, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It goes back to the, you know, I listen to this and it sounds more like things like Sally Patel would say, you know, it's like if there's a plague out here. You know, how far do you go, you know, once you do this? Do you say people shouldn't be born? People shouldn't go to your college? You know, this is some serious stuff.
It really is. It really, really is. And I just want to remind people, if you'd like to call in and talk about this or anything else, the number to call, 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number to call is 855-346-3351. And if you're any of the people that are hanging out online and haven't joined in yet, I hope you're having a great night. And be sure to just press 1 or star 1 in order to be able to flag me to let me know that you want to come into the conversation. So I think that this is, again, this is scary because the way, and then what they actually have to the way it's presented, you know, that's another whole issue. It really, you know, there may be, and yet they're acting as if. It says in the Huffington Post, it says that the new research reveals a genetic mutation that may be able to predict suicide risk with a minimum of 80% accuracy. The study published July 30th on the website. So the American Journal of Psychiatry is where we need to go to next, and we need to read that study and figure out what they're saying. But I don't know about you, but I can never seem to really truly understand what they're saying, except maybe might be in the future. Like those kinds of words I get real clear. So it was
but
more common. So
Nazis,
it said that
they,
it said that this gene SKA2, which helps regulate the brain's response to stress hormones, was more common in people who had committed suicide. And so that's why I said before, well, maybe brown hair was more common. Do you know what I mean? Like this is ludicrous, or blonde hair, or blue eyes, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You know, but then it says currently suicidality can only be assessed clinically. People at risk of attempting suicide can exhibit warning signs, like talking or writing about a desire to commit suicide or trying to access firearms or pills. Other risk factors for suicide include a previous suicide attempt, a family history of attempted or completed suicide, and various mental disorders. But often medical professionals, the article, Huffington Post article, says don't have access to that kind of information, which is why they need a blood test. The need for a blood test is so urgent, said Dr. Alexander Niculescu, the third, an associate professor of psychiatry and medical neuroscience at the Indiana University School of Medicine, who was not involved in the study. He says, quote, people don't always tell others they are suicidal, especially if they don't want to be hospitalized, said Niculescu. Well, that's true.
Yeah, it's urgent. It's urgent for the sake of psychiatry. It's urgent that they try to come up with some proof, you know, some reason to continue to do what they do to people. They need something legitimate, which I just don't think they're ever going to find.
It's just so deeply problematic on so many levels.
Well, we should be doing our own studies about how these kind of interventions are dangerous. I mean, I think that we should be collecting that. I think that would have more validity than something like this. I think about some old book I was seeing where they were measuring people's heads and face and stuff like this. It kind of smacks back of that. It's like, you know.
It's like eugenics.
Your fate is predetermined. You know, you're just a weak person. The reason why you're feeling suicidal or you commit suicide, you just, you know, it's just that you got some bad genes. There's nothing we can do about it. There's, you know, why wouldn't they be looking at the conditions that bring about this versus this thing that it's all in the, well, I guess this is, again, promotion of that thesis that, you know, that there's some biological or biochemical basis to this. So,
yeah, so get this. Psych Survivor, at Psych Survivor on Twitter just sent me an article where somewhere he explains, but correlation does not imply causation, and that's absolutely right, and that we have to do that. But he sent me a link to a Mad in America website where he says he explains the software hardware why this genes of mental illness is baloney, and I'm trying to pull it up right now. This technology is just phenomenal, isn't it? People all over the world jumping in, sending information.
Yeah, but that's what it reminds me of, you know, when they looked at your nose, your head, and whatever else, and said based on that. Yeah.
It's definitely, I think it definitely is, something that we need to counter. And even if there is a correlation, it does not mean there is causation. And so that's like the whole, point of it. But I just find it funny that people are sending things from all over the place. And so I think there are a lot of people who are concerned about this and that feel that we need to be as prepared as we can for when all of this comes down, because they are just moving at outrageous pace, it seems to me, to move their agenda in a way that is just surely going to eliminate.
Got to keep an eye on it and see where also the funding is coming from. This it's totally, you know, government money, or if is this funding harder for this, or is this somewhere else. I mean, when we have people that are not getting the services they need, they're veterans, and to spend money on something like this, I mean, they can be, they've been, what about the studies they've been doing for the last 20 years? Why can't they go back and haven't they been getting blood samples? And they can't determine from the samples they have already, you know, for the last 20 or 30 years.
It really, who knows? And are people being told? And when you're in the military, can they just take your blood and do what they want with it anyway and not have to tell you anything? And what kind of test did they predict that they were able to look back and see with 90% accuracy or whatever it was that that guy, Nurleski or whatever his name is, was talking about, that he had a 90% positive of...
I'm sorry,
80%.
Are they talking about suicide attempts or did the person committed suicide and they're dead?
I don't know, Iman. They're so convoluted about this. I really need to go to the American Journal of Psychiatry and try to find the actual article. But it says in this Huffington Post article that Kaminsky then confirmed the results with blood samples from three different ongoing studies. He designed a test to see if he could predict which of the participants had either suicidal thoughts or attempts in the past. The test was able to predict participants' history of suicide attempts or suicidal thoughts with at least 80% accuracy.
They didn't put a history on the person? They just looked at the blood?
Yes, and then among those... Then it goes on, among those with the most severe risk of suicide, Kaminsky was able to predict attempts or suicidal thoughts with 90% accuracy. Among the youngest participants, Kaminsky was able to predict past suicidal attempts with 96% accuracy. And then he says, we have found a gene that we think could be really important for consistently identifying a range of behaviors from suicidal thoughts to attempts to completions, Kaminsky said in a press release. We need to study this in a larger sample, but we believe that we might be able to monitor the blood to identify those at risk of suicide.
So they're going to say, we have a blood test now. This is like those brain scans. And we're going to...
It's so disgusting. It's just so disgusting. And it is such a, again, just a, such a miss, like, that these people don't have any business. They obviously don't know the first thing about suicide if they think that being able to monitor the blood is going to be able to prevent it. It is just, they totally have missed the boat, and there should be some level of responsibility for who gets this kind of money and power to do this kind of research. And I still, I'm still looking around their site. I don't see anything about informed consent anywhere.
Well, this, you know, this is really serious because, you know, just like they, you know, we thought that psychotherapy was the gold standard. And then, what was it, 40, 50 years ago, they discovered some of the Generation One drugs and, you know, you speed forward 30, 40 years, people aren't even, some people are not practicing, not all, but many people are not practicing psychiatry. They just have someone come in every 90 days and give them a pill. So I guess maybe now they won't even do that. They'll just say, well, we don't, you know, like, you know, it goes back to your saying that this is, you know, just all fantasy and bogus. You know, just take a blood test, you know, and will you be able to monitor and tell whether the person is going to actually do something or not, you know? So you can
it
see
is, it looks like...
Accuracy, why would we, I mean, does that mean that you're going to lock up people if they have the bad gene to protect them?
It's entirely unclear. It appears, I found a question and answer page under, I think, the resources tab on armystars.org, and it says that participation is voluntary. Are there any risks in participating? For some people, answering questions about stressful experiences can make them anxious or upset. Other people find it helpful to answer questions about these experiences. If the questions upset you, you can stop at any time. It is very unlikely, but if you were to become so upset that you needed medical treatment, the Army would provide it. The researchers will not provide the treatment or compensation for services. There will be no follow-up intervention or diagnoses made from your questionnaire responses.
It sounds like to this, you know, sounds like what they did was they had people that came into their mental health clinics and maybe anyway, and I wouldn't be surprised if they had 90-some percent of those people had, you know, had suicidal thoughts and thought about suicide if that was the case, you know. If they just, you know, if you went to a clinic and you said, and these were, the military has had stigma associated with any kind of emotional distress. You know, you're always seen as weak. So if you go somewhere and you collect blood from people that are coming into their clinic, I wouldn't be surprised if 90-some percent of the people in an environment where they feel like they just needed help so badly that even besides the stigma, they came in and they gave them blood tests. So that could explain why they got, you know, such a high rate like that. I mean, 90-some percent, you know. And how does that compare with a normal population?
It's just unclear to me as to where I even found it was by the numbers, that little thing, because I'm not seeing anywhere anybody talking about blood tests in any of the question answer parts, but they specifically said that they collected total unique soldiers giving blood, 42,841, total blood tubes collected, 58,642. And this is pre-post deployment phase. Post, I mean, you really need to sit down, and I would really need to sit down. I'm not that good that I can.
You don't really have to be attached for this, because they say of the World War II veterans that, you know, because a lot of them are dying now anyway, just from different things, but that the suicide rate was high among them. I mean, you know, I don't think it shouldn't be unthinkable to think that if people that have had 5, 6, 7, 8 deployments, that they would, you know, be in an emotional distress, you know. I mean, I think this is the longest war that we've had in any country, and there are probably some veterans that are listening to the show. You know, you have people that have, you know, most people in Vietnam did 1 or 2 tours. Maybe in World War II, people were away for 4 years. But, you know, this is kind of a sustained witnessing of trauma over a long period of time.
It looks like they do show the instrumentation that they use if you go to the Army stores. So one of them seems to be 40 pages long. Questionnaire.
That's torture, right?
Instrument Part B. I don't see any consent form or anything like that. That just may be because I haven't found it yet. It may not be because it doesn't exist.
We need an association of other peer psychologists and psychiatrists to kind of look at these studies and things that they do, because, you know, somebody's going to take this now. They're going to take this market that they have, this gene test. You know, when you go now to be employed, they give people drug tests. So why couldn't they take a gene test? They've got them put already.
Well, I suppose they can, you know, they can. This is just so bad. This is what leads us back down a path of rooting out. And
it's a slippery slope moving towards, you know. But it's not very much. I guess we have to look at, I hope you post this article that you have, because I want to, or you just at least send it to me. I'd like to look more in to seeing, you know, like you said, the 40-page instrument. Where did they pick these people from? Because I'm quite sure there's a great deal. I'm quite sure there's millions of dollars involved in this. When we have people that can't get appointments, or they've had appointments, they had a separate record-keeping system where people didn't get appointments with
right.
the VA for 90 days. You know, and all these people, active duty military, that they took the test of, that sounds like what it probably was. And what, then when they get the information and they complete the study, what are they going to do with it, you know? Sometimes some things probably shouldn't be studied.
I don't know, but the only place I'm seeing that there is a consent form, but it doesn't seem to be in any of the, even though they say it's in here, I don't see it. But the first instrument is 52 pages long. The second instrument, I think, was 36 pages long, and the fourth one was 40 pages long. And so this is the questionnaires that they were asked on all kinds of aspects, but I still don't see where the agreement to give blood is. And they're specifically saying that they found blood, that they, you know, were testing the blood, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been doing these gene studies on the civilian population for a long time. I know I went to Howard University here. They had one, and they did an exhaustive history, and then they took your blood. You know, this is maybe about 10 years ago, and a lot of people did that. When they said they were looking for one of the genes or one of the illnesses, supposedly, quote-unquote, one of the illnesses. But I guess they've been doing these studies for a very long time. So the fact that the military is doing one, I guess this is a way of keeping Army researchers on the payroll, but there's so many other things. Why can't they find will this may lead to the vaccine? Why can't they find the vaccine for Ebola? Cancer, you know. I mean, there's so many things that devastate people.
But the fraud to suggest that it's something that's in the blood instead of, especially for one more traumatic experience. I mean, obviously, but there's clearly trauma in war, and so to deny that and say that this is just a factor of you having some genetic mutation or something. And deny the experience and to deny what these service people have put on the line for this country, and then for this country to treat these people in this way and to just write it off as, oh, it's just a genetic, it's just, you know, a new genetic mutation that's happening at an alarming rate amongst people who specifically are, like, put in situations that are excessively traumatic. Like, what it, I'm sorry. It's infuriating. It's infuriating that your government would do this. That
worst part about it is that people read this stuff and they don't question. You know, they don't say, "Well, this doesn't really sound right." You know, when I heard you talk about this, I wanted to say, "Well, where are the investigative reporters?" You know. That uncover fraud and waste in government. You know, this would be something that you want to be, you know, checking out. Where are the people that check how people do research? And, you know, like you said, the informed study and, you know, did they do a randomized study or were they all returning? Sounds like when you say deployed and returning, is that they really use people that were active duty, front line, like infantry.
Hello.
And
Yes. Hi, Sue. I just opened your line.
Hi. How are you, everybody? I just think that this test is ludicrous. I think it's really, really, you know, the government has gone hog wild, you know, nuts on this, okay? Like, I don't believe this test. I don't want to validate it, and it's just another form of psychiatry trying to think of something new that's ludicrous. It's just totally hogwash, okay? As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, lady, too. sorry, she's usually
like
pretty good during the show.
And the dog agrees, too.
Yeah, she's had it up to here. Enough of this.
and me, too. I've had enough of this, you know, looking at all the crap on the Internet, because I go through the Internet a lot every day. And all this bogus stuff is just driving me right up the wall. And, you know, I have to say I'm getting sick and tired of psychiatrists coming up with some concoction or new scheme to show the world, we found this hormone, we found this gene. It's all crap. That's all I got to say for tonight, guys. Okay?
It's awesome they can have more research and getting money for, and like I said, the all these other things that are more, they're serious, they should be working on.
Thanks, Sue. It really is just out of control, and there should be some collected effort to be investigating these people. Absolutely. Why? How many millions of tax dollars are being spent on this garbage? Why are people who are coming back from war in the distress that they're in and experiencing what they're experiencing, like, would it have something to do with the fact that they were just in war? Like, why isn't the work of people like Paula Kaplan being, held out to veterans and giving people an opportunity to talk and to just listen to what they want to talk about and just being there with somebody and not, you know, telling them that the problem is that they have some kind of genetic failure that's gonna be, what's wrong with this society?
Well, how many hours do you think it took them to do the 40 or 50 page instrument? That's another thing. And what were the qualifications of the people who did it? You know.
Oh, and I mean, and then it's got all kinds of questions. So, obviously it's got all kinds of questions, but it's got all kinds of directions in the questions. So, like, in other words, I just am on page 46, section T, social networks. The next few questions are about your personal relationships. What is your marital status? Married, never married, divorced, separated, widowed. Married, continue with question T2. Never married, skip to question T4. Divorced, separated, or widowed, go to T3. T2, for, you know what I mean? Like, this is, like, it's not just answer questions. It's, you know, put yourself into these little boxes. Couples handle disagreements in many different ways. Sometimes couples do the following things during a disagreement. Yell, insult, or swear. Sulk or refuse to talk. Say or do something to purposely make them angry or upset. Throw, smash, or kick something. When you and your partner have a disagreement, how often do you do any of the things on the list to your partner? Often, sometimes, rarely, never.
Well,
really? Really, government? Really, government? Like, what a friggin' crock.
40 or 50 pages of questions like that. Maybe it's the questions more so than the blood test. If you're doing that kind of in-depth, you know, 40 or 50, I don't know how many questions are on a page. If you were doing that kind of a person, then...
You got it. Yeah, it's T15. The next question is for research purposes only and will be kept confidential. How many people have you had sexual intercourse with in the past 12 months? And what were the genders of these people? Your best estimate is fine if you cannot remember the exact numbers. Number of male sexual partners, enter one number to a box. Number of female sexual partners, enter one number to a box. And then the next section is spirituality. And then, you know, and then it's like these personality tests of like, you know, and then what is your birth order? What is your this? What is your that? You want to talk about invasive. This is entirely personally
getting down to your real business, honey. How many people walked out on this, you know?
It really
personal questions, you know, that you were.
I don't know.
Somebody coming back, you know, it's just like somebody, imagine someone coming back from a deployment and they have this 40 or 50 page questionnaire. I mean, are they doing it in one setting? Are they doing it two? The kind of question that you're asking, I can only imagine what other questions they could be asking a person that they would be. You know, if you did that all in one setting, how invasive that would be, and then you take some of their blood too. I mean, the questions by itself might, you know, I don't think maybe they could, you know, from all the questions get something. But the idea that they'd be able to see something in the blood is ridiculous because they haven't seen it yet. So, I mean, so they...
It's so deeply problematic.
I bet you there's family money in this, you know, because they have to have the... supposedly half the research that's done in the United States and Israel has family foundation money on it. I'd want to see where this you know, money is coming from, you know. Because, like I said, that we have such a great need for veterans and our active duty military to get some real service.
In that article that Sue sent over, there's a quote that says, quote, defects in the gene are a bit like having faulty brakes in your car. If the car is not moving or you're not exposed to stress, there's no problem. You need the stress to see whether the gene works or not, Professor Kaminsky says. And so what's the next test? Putting people who have this gene under extreme amounts of stress to see if they'll kill themselves? Like, what a friggin' crock.
Well, I remember 10 years ago being in a NAMI conference where they usually have after doctor sessions, and then they have people from NIMH to come, and they talked about putting animals under stress because they wanted to recreate schizophrenia. And so, you know, that and other things over the years made me say, well, if you have to create if you can create that, then it's not really something biological.
Right.
Not something chemical. If you can take animals and, I mean, I've tried to, I'm in a room now where I can't get to the internet, but before I called you and I saw your article, I was kind of feeling the Huffington Post. You know, the idea that mice could be suicidal.
Right. And how would you, and because they have this gene that, like, and that they're going to, like, they're communicating with mice, they figured out how to have that human-mouse language barrier finally overcome? Like, what?
Mouse language.
Of mice and men? Is that it? Is this, you know, is this 1984 and now it's all going to finally, you know, be laid out for us?
People that are very desperate and they have access to, you know, lots of money to do stuff like that, and they continue to do it over the last 10, 20, 30 years. It's just like, you know, like I said, it's like digging a hole. Somebody else says, steal it. Someone says, dig it, and you say, why are you doing it? It's sort of like the same thing. I mean, I haven't come across any... I mean, it would be front page news over the last 20, 30 years if they had found something. I mean, that they're not saying that they found anything. They just said, we're doing this study. And
there
that,
might. There's a you know, there's a correlation. There's a, you know,
if you do,
coincidence.
If you do 40 or 50 page questionnaire of a person, behaviorally, I think that you probably could find some patterns that are there. I don't think it has anything to do with the blood. I mean, you know, 40, 50 questions. That's, you know, hours and hours of probing questions.
It really, who knows what they're... What...
I mean, that's like saying that students...
Okay, here's
I've got A's on the report card, you know. And I just, you took 40 students who were A students, and you said, well, we can see that blondes are more prone to get A's. I had my psychiatrist was saying that there's no test, nothing. You know, these are the people in the healthcare profession, they know there isn't. Otherwise, they would be. They would be doing brain scans, and they take your blood now, but it's because they want to see if there's damage to your liver and kidneys from psychotropic drugs. There would be no need to sit down and do a diagnostic examination of someone. You just take your blood and you just say, "Well, look, there's nothing you can do about it. You got it, and it's like you got cancer."
Yeah, I mean they keep on going after cortisol. It's all connecting to cortisol. There was that other study, remember, a couple of weeks ago that came out, cortisol related.
Imagine people's waist size. Isn't cortisol something that makes you fat? That's
well,
what you said, right?
Well, cortisol. Well, that's what the commercials say. Yeah, it's related. It seems to be related to stress, weight gain, and a bunch of other things. Also, perhaps, but it's this article says. See, I don't even know if this is the right article. Identification and replication of a combined epigenetic and genetic biomarker predicting suicide and suicidal behaviors. But
well, maybe someone might want to call in. What kinds of things do people do when they have a friend or they know someone who might be suicidal? You know what I mean? You know that this research is, there's lots of money behind it, so they'll probably continue to do this for 5 or 6 years or whatever else. But in the meantime, you know, people should know that there is a 800 suicide hotline.
Those things very often wind up getting you called right to the police. So, I think that if there are people out there who are needing support, to try to talk to somebody who will listen.
I mean, 800 suicide, I've referred people there, and they don't call the police. I mean, they seem to have enough. I don't know, you know, how, if it's changed, but I have, and that's what they say, the police don't come. You know, they have enough to say, but I agree with you that having 5 friends who you can talk to is probably more important.
Day or night, having somebody who just will get you and to, you know, if you're out there right now and you're listening and you know, that you to understand that, you know, there are many of us who have been through it, continually have to battle it, and, you know, that there's a support network of existence out here, and that it's not out of your control. There are things that you can do. And it's scary because I've lost friends, and I've lost loved ones, and that's always a scary thing. But as somebody who I can remember at a very young age, I think I was about 7, being the first time that I had the idea that I wanted to end my life. I understand that, and I think that when people just say things and talk about it, everybody around them gets so freaked out that they can't ever heal from the trauma, and that when you can move from the trauma, I don't think LifeNet or any of those people are concerned about any of that. I wouldn't.
Because when you rush people to the hospital or lock them up, this conversation stops. Because we know that if you have suicidal thoughts and, you know, you get locked up for 24 hours, 72 hours, they don't stop. I mean, you can do some work so that you eventually are not suicidal, but it's not because someone just took you in somewhere, and for that point in time, you no longer have feelings of suicide. You know, it takes some work, it takes support.
And it takes just learning how to deal with it in a different way. And I think that it's a lifelong thing. And the more I talk about it with people over the years, the more you know, that point gets hit on, that this is, that changing the way that we react to our own thoughts is important. And
delay, sometimes having things to look forward to as a future, you can't commit suicide if you got, well, you can, but, you know, it helps when you have positive things to look forward to. And what I try to say is that suicide is a permanent solution to temporary problems. You know, and school is starting soon.
School is starting soon.
And some kids, I saw a little piece on Facebook where a kid was putting he wasn't speaking, he was just putting up words up, and he was sort of like telling his story a bit about how he was doing self-harm, his coping, and how he was bullied at school. And, you know, people should, it would be nice if people sat down and talked to their kids. And, you know, sometimes you say, school's going to start, and the kid doesn't want to go to school, or your kid is, maybe he's not the person or she's not the person that's being bullied, but they might be the bullier, or they might be the kids who kind of collaborate with the bullying. And it's very hard. You know, children can be very cruel.
Absolutely. And in other ways, you know, for many people, school is starting again, and it's another opportunity to get out, get the life that you want, be able to reframe it, be able to, I mean, I think that if I had somebody in an earlier age telling me that, you know, whatever other people thought or said, that the natural response should be, you know, F it, that's, you know, part of what I think young people need to know is that I remember people would say to me, you're, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face all the time. And that I would specifically destroy myself instead of, you know, giving myself a chance to get what I wanted. And that for
something like a suicide survivor groups, I know it's here at Howard University, they have, in Washington, they have family. I thought it was suicide survivor for the people who survived themselves, but they're for family members who survived suicide. But having a support circle of other individuals who agree that if you say, well, I need someone to talk to, and when I need them, I want you to be one of my supporters. So when I call you and it's 11 o'clock at night or whatever else, it's because I really I want to tell you that I really need the support. I tell people oftentimes, I says, you can call me, you know, between, don't call me after 11 o'clock. Don't call me before 7. But if it's something really important, call me and tell me, look, Yvonne, this is one of those calls. And it's very important to have, when people are feeling hopeless, to have a few people that they can count on and call and talk to. I think that I wish they would do more, put some money toward helping young people develop their own little support circles. And for people who in the military who are returning, helping them and their families to have the support they need versus taking them through a 50-page behavioral study and then trying to mesh that with some blood.
I mean, I think, before we go back to the veterans, I just want to touch on the children's issue one more time. And, you know, in the same Mental Health America newsletter thing, there was also an in-the-news blurb about an article that came out on Psych Central on July 31st, and the Mental Health America headline is, "Many children with depression as preschoolers have condition in later years." And Mental Health America writes, "Children who had depression as preschoolers were 2.5 times more likely to suffer from the condition in elementary and middle school than kids who were not depressed at very young ages," a new study finds. Researchers whose findings are published in the American Journal of Psychiatry followed 246 children, now ages 9 to 12, who were enrolled in the study as preschoolers when they were 3 to 5 years old. This is, like, what parent is allowing their children to be studied by psychiatry at these mm-hmm. ages? The children and their primary caregivers participated in up to 6 annual and 4 semi-annual assessments. At the start of the study, 74 of the children were diagnosed with depression. When the researchers evaluated the same group 6 years later, they found that 79 children met the full criteria for clinical depression. More than 51% of the 74 children who were originally diagnosed as preschoolers also were depressed as school-age kids. Only 24% of the 172 children who were not depressed as preschoolers went on to develop depression during the elementary and middle school years. The researchers also found that school-age children had a high risk of depression and if their mothers were depressed, and they noted that children diagnosed with a conduct disorder as preschoolers had an elevated risk of depression by school age and early adolescence. But this risk declined if the children were found to have significant maternal support. But neither a mother with depression nor conduct disorder in preschool increased the risk for later depression as much as a diagnosis of depression during preschool years. So wouldn't that just say that, like, what you should do is stop diagnosing these kids with depression in preschool years? Like, this is...
Well, they had a someplace here, I don't know if they still do this, they talked about have, they had a nursery, psychiatric nursery. Now,
yeah.
Why do you have kids that are under 2 years old? How can you possibly know? But, you know, I guess they did the right thing. They looked at the environment. People still don't want to go back to that, you know, nurture or nature. But,
well,
you know, a 2 or 3 year old child is probably more impacted by the environment than an adult. So, you know, they probably have the information right in front of them. They just don't refuse to look at it. But like you said, you know, who's going to